Listening to KRUU-LP 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond, grassroots, listener-supported, solar-powered radio, broadcasting live from the Cultural District here in sunny Fairfield, Iowa, on a beautiful October Friday in 2017. And this is Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. And I'm your host, Monica Hadley. With me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone. And it is a beautiful day for a solar power station.
Or for anybody.
For anything. For anything. It's one of those wonderful days that you think, oh, gosh,
can it last? If this would only last. If we had weather like this, like 6 months out of the year instead of two or three, then we would have a problem because everybody would want to live here.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
But that would possibly be a change we could deal with, especially yes. After reading today's book.
Yes, indeed.
And what do we have today, Mom?
Today's book is Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. And it's by Sharon Weil. And Sharon was long engaged in conversation about courage and change as an author, activist, award-winning filmmaker, and somatic educator. She's an author of the novel Donnie and Ursula Save the World. And this novel is what really sparked her interest in the courage to change and do what it takes to rise to activism, to come from nothing to get something done. And we've seen that through history. And she's going to tell us how you do it now.
Yeah, and what is that? Was it Margaret Mead who said something about never doubt that one person who's really engaged can change the world? In fact, nothing else ever has, or something like that.
That could be. Could be.
Well, welcome to Writer's Voices, Sharon. Do you know that quote I just bungled?
Yes, you were very close. I can't quote it exactly either, but she was basically saying that never underestimate the power of the individual or a small group of people to get change done. In fact, that's the way it always happens.
Yeah, yeah. So it must. I think it is possibly pretty unusual to have somebody go from writing a novel to starting a podcast about the underlying themes of the novel to writing a book about those themes. Did you ever think that would be the journey you'd be on?
No, not at all. And in fact, I started before writing a novel. I was a screenwriter for many years, also a director and a producer, but I was a screenwriter. So I went from screenwriting a novel to a podcast to these works of nonfiction. But really, I was following an organic thread that was pulling me, sort of all led by this question of what does it take to be brave and when is enough enough? I think I've asked myself that question, throughout my life in many ways. When is enough enough? When is that moment that you go from looking out and going, oh, something really needs to be done about this, to saying, I must do something about this now? And
wow.
Novel Donnie and Ursula, it's a very funny novel, it's a quirky novel, it's a sexy novel, but it's also a political novel, and it's a romantic comedy about these two mismatched lovers, and each of them, for their own reason, don't want to be involved in much in the outside world, but they become compelled to action through their own attraction for one another. The premise of that book is that it's our eros, it's that life force, it's our attraction that pulls us into whatever motivates human behavior. But from that book, I really wanted to talk to real activists, real people who are working with change and find out how do they do it? What do they do? How do they work with change? And I engaged in conversation with, over 50 people, 25 of whom appear in this book, Changeability, but, asking them about how they work with change and what is good for change. And from those podcasts, I started hearing things in common to what they were saying, enough so that I wanted to put it in a book, which contains a lot of excerpts from the podcast. So that people, so that more people could learn from these amazing change innovators.
Well, There's a lot of information in this book. I mean, it's about so many different things because we don't, you know, we go along in our lives and we think, you know, day to day, we don't think about the changes that are happening, that they are happening now. And people are actively making things change and we kind of don't even realize it.
Now, is the Changeability Playbook primarily about how to cause change or how to deal with change or both?
Okay, so there's the Changeability book, how artists, activists, and awakeners navigate change, and then I wrote the Changeability Playbook, how to navigate your own change. So you're referring to both. The playbook is really like a workbook, but I call it a playbook because I think we'd rather play than work. It's an opportunity. It's like an activity book. It's like a journal, so people can engage with their own change using the principles that are laid out in Changeability.
Okay. So the book that I have that we're looking at is Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. And the PR page that I have is about the Changeability Playbook. So
okay,
that's
great.
Why
so,
I got
yes,
confused.
So there's that. And there's even the Changeability Deck, which is a deck of 48 reflection cards based on the 7 principles for change laid out in the book, with simple questions on each card that allow you to have like a daily reflection about the change that you're working with. But to go back and answer the question that you were first asking me about, you know, whether we're initiating change or whether adapting to change, you know, the nature of this life that we're living is that everything is changing all the time, right? You started your show by talking about, oh, if only this weather could, right? Yeah, well, it won't, and we know that it won't. And,
right,
you know, weather
right.
is a great way for us to look at how things change from moment to moment, right? But in looking at the nature of change, we're really, you know, we're either initiating change, which means I'm starting something new, I'm doing something to create some kind of change. I'm adapting to change, which means that there's a change that's occurring and I have to accommodate it, which, you know, every day we're constantly accommodating so many small changes, whether we notice it or not. There's inspiring change, which is what teachers and spiritual leaders and heroes are doing in us. They're showing us how we might change something or inspiring us to it. And then there's also restoring, which has to do with healing, you know, has to do with repairing something that has been broken, trying to restore it to whole. A lot of times when people are, you know, well, you know, out here we still have wildfires burning, but we've had terrible, terrible, tragic wildfires up in Northern California where people's homes, you know, burned down to the ground, entire neighborhoods burned down to the ground in an instant. So they're adapting to change, and they're also going to be initiating change to restore, right, if they build their home again or they have to reconfigure their lives. So those are the different ways in which I look at change. You know, in this book, in these books, what I'm trying to do is help people locate themselves in change by understanding different aspects of not only the nature of change, but how we respond to change, and understanding that sometimes the difficulties that we have in meeting change has to do with how we feel about the change, or it has to do with the speed of the change. It's too fast, or it's too impossibly slow, or it's unseen and people don't like that. You know, so sometimes our challenges to change don't have to do with the change itself, but have to do with our responses to it. So I try to break down a lot of these things in this book, which is why there's a lot in there.
And why you ended up with 2 books, possibly.
Right.
Was that, did you, when you started doing, you know, that's, well, actually, let's go back a little bit. So you published Donnie and Ursula Save the World.
Yes.
And what kind of response did that get?
So I published Donnie and Ursula Save the World, and I know that on your show you're very interested in creative process and you know, the process by which we do things. So I just want to let your listeners know that I self-published Donnie and Ursula Save the World. And I did that because, having been a screenwriter for many years and understanding just what it takes to get someone to read your work and to get someone to buy your work and then to get it made, it just, like, you know, it can take forever. And I didn't want to take forever with this book. And part of it was because I was just tired of waiting forever. But the other part was because the book deals with the political aspect of the book is that it contemplates the end of food there's a plot by an agribusiness giant to own all the seeds of the world, and that's what Donnie and Ursula are saving the world from. And so it's a pressing issue, and I didn't want to wait forever to have this book come out. And I really, you know, having been in the film and TV world, I didn't really know much about the publishing world at all, and I figured, well, if I'm going to learn about the publishing world, I could learn about the self-publishing world. And so I went ahead and self-published Donnie and Ursula, which was a great experience, excuse me, and did a lot of coupling the book with activist organizations who were working against genetically modified seeds and working towards bringing awareness about genetically modified seeds. And this book helped to bring people to awareness about what's actually going on in terms of the dangers of genetically modified seeds. And so it was well received, but, you know, within a limited circle, because when you self-publish, it's all up to you to create your own distribution network as well as your own advertisement. But it was a really fun process that then led me to do the podcast, which I had never done a podcast before either. This whole activities have, talk about change, have asked me to do new things constantly.
Oh, absolutely. Now,
I've never done a podcast before.
Working with the GMO activists, you must be familiar with Fairfield, where we are, Fairfield, Iowa, and because we have some of the major GMO activists working from here. Jeffrey Smith, do you know him? Have you spoken with Jeffrey Smith?
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, so he lives here, or he did. I'm not sure if he's still living here, but, you know, and also Global ID, which is one of the major testing organizations for GMOs, is headquartered here. So this is an issue that we're very familiar with here. Yeah.
Yes, and so in fact, I used heard Jeffrey Smith speak, and I used a lot of his references as research, you know, for the book, and it's an important issue to be speaking to, and in my view, you know, speaking to an important issue through fiction, and not only fiction, but through humor.
Mm.
Through humor, but through kind of a sexy humor. It's like, yeah, you're going to get people's attention.
Yeah.
More so than a dry presentation. And that's exactly what happened. You know, I feel like with humor, you know, you draw people in, and and while their mouths are open laughing, you know, you can throw your message down their throat. They swallow it.
All right. I think I just found the quote for my blog about this show.
But it's so true, right? I mean, you know, it's like when people are laughing, they're open, and they're open, and so something can land more easily. You know, and I even speak to that in the changeability books in one of the seven principles of change that I identify, which is called Spark Fire. And part of Spark Fire, you know, part of what I call, you know, what I call Eros isn't necessarily just like, you know, sex or lust. You know, it really is this animating life force that animates all of life. And it is this attraction, and when we're drawn to something, and when we're in play, and when we're in delight, so much we're so much more receptive. You really do want to engage people and get them to see something differently. It really helps if you do it in a playful way or in a humorous, delightful way.
Well, there's so many things, you know, wrong with the world that you can get fatigued just thinking about it and just want to block it all out and just, okay, I'm just going to go on with my life and not think about these because I can't deal with it. It's just too much. It's overwhelming. I'll be depressed. I won't be able to get out of bed in the morning. So what you're saying is
now, yes.
Yeah, that, and I know I've read articles, you know, about activism and basically the burnout that can occur.
Yes.
Among activists. So your remedy for that is humor and playfulness.
Remedy for that is humor and what we could call refreshment, right? You know, there's a need to refresh ourselves. Through something, whether we refresh ourselves through humor, whether we refresh ourselves through some sort of physical practice that we enjoy, not like, oh, I have to go to the gym. It's like engages us, right? You know, I personally like to dance, so, you know, dancing refreshes me, or walking in the woods refreshes me, or, you know, being with my loved ones and my family refreshes me, or eating a good meal refreshes me. You know, it's like we have to keep recycling our energy or refreshing our energy so that we can face whatever is difficult, right? You know, it's like we have to give ourselves breaks, and whether that's just having a good night's sleep before you go out there or whether it's about pacing yourself. I know you're talking about this fatigue of feeling like, you know, there's so many fronts of life that need our attention and need our compassion and need our voice and need our action. And how do we choose? You know, a number of the activists that I spoke with, you know, really said, you know, those who have burned out and those who have sustained it over time, you know, say that it's just incremental. You know, it's like you're happy for the small victories and you celebrate each one and you take it, you know, you take it bite size by bite size is the best way not to get overwhelmed.
Mm.
What is one thing I can do today?
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Sharon Weil, author of Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. All right, so the novel came out. You're promoting it through connecting with various activist groups that are linked towards to the theme of the book, and then you decide to do a podcast. You've never done a podcast. Where did you start?
I never did a podcast. I never even listened to a podcast before I started the podcast. But, you know, okay, I'll jump in. I had, my publisher, Rare Bird Books, wonderful people at Rare Bird Books, are the ones that really drew me into the podcast, and they actually produced it. They had a podcast channel on Blog Talk Radio that they said, you know, just come on and do this, and, you know, showed me the technology, and I decided that I just wanted to reach out. I happen to have known a number of very fascinating change innovators, and I just started there. And initially, I started with people within topics that were related to Donnie and Ursula, because the title of the podcast is Passing for Normal, Conversations with Artists, Activists, and Awakeners About Seeding Change in the World. Playing on that word seed because of the seed topic of Donnie and Ursula. So I was talking to people who were permaculturists and people who were working in, you know, the area of food and ecology, and I was talking to spirituality teachers, and I was talking to people involved with social change movements, whether like one of them, Corinne Bordeaux, who is a public, she does public relations for a lot of social change films, or whether it was Paul Loeb, who is an amazing writer and speaker about activism itself, citizen activism. He wrote The Impossible Will Take a Little While. you know, wonderful books. And now he's involved in this incredible project called the Campus Election Project, where it's a nonpartisan project, getting college students involved in the election process. Mm. And that's what he's been dedicated to for several years, but spoke to people who are working in prison reform and spoke to meditation teachers and body workers and people who help people reduce their anxiety through changing how they breathe. And I spoke with writers and group facilitators who were working with, you know, helping people come to consensus in a group, and you know, even someone who helps people move their homes, which is a time of great change and stress. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, mm-hmm. across the board here, just heard amazing stories about how they work with change within their own lives, how they've met change within their work, how they deal with hopeless causes and keep persevering. And each one of these people who I spoke with, or who I continue to speak with because I still do the podcast, have been doing whatever they've been doing for 20, 30, 40 years. So everyone's very... you know, they've experienced a lot of success and some failures and some course corrections, right, that they've learned from and regrouped and continued on. And so, you know, the technology of the podcast was a little overwhelming for me initially, but the courage, my own personal courage to talk to these amazing people, you know, I grew into it, and it turned out to be just a wonderful thing. And then when people, were listening to the podcast and giving me feedback about how helpful it was and how wonderful it was, you know, it just spurs you on, which is, I'm sure, the same for your show too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've been doing this for 11 years.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we probably do 45 shows a year, live or occasionally we record, but 45 original shows a year, and then the rest are rebroadcast. So, you know, that's over 500 authors, editors, publishers that we've spoken to.
And sometimes authors than once, of course.
What a treasure chest. That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Now, how long have you been doing, and the name of your podcast is?
Podcast is Passing for Normal, so numeral 4.
Okay.
Passing numeral 4, normal. And you can find it most easily on iTunes.
All right.
It sits on SoundCloud, but you can access it most easily on iTunes, Passing for Normal.
Okay. And so how long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it, I've done 3 seasons of it. So like since, I think I started in 2015.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have like a regular schedule that you had to hold to, that you had to release, like, air once a week, or was it more flexible?
I did, but because of the guest scheduling, it was very, you know, I had to accommodate their scheduling, and so I pre-recorded it with them and then aired it every Thursday at 11 o'clock.
Okay. And
right now, I've taken a bit of a hiatus, but I am going to be starting a new season soon. And so, you know, but the truth is, most people listen to it in the archive.
Right.
You know,
right.
Only a few people listen to it live, and so I still roll it out at the same time on the same date, and I do like a series, and so a series could, you know, the first series was 25 interviews, but the next series was 12, and the next series was 8, so just, you know, sort of depends on what feels right, and that's the great thing about podcasts, right? Different than having a weekly radio show like you do,
right? yeah, where if we don't show up, or the guest doesn't show up, we've got dead air.
Yeah,
right. But see, I could just like, okay, you know, people will listen to it as it comes.
Right, right.
Yes.
And did you find when you started out that each interview took a lot more preparation than as later on, as you got more used to it, that you could wing it more?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I really read up on these people and prepared questions. And as, you know, as I'm, look, you've been doing this so much longer than I have, but you understand that there's a certain play between preparation and improvisation, right?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So I have this, you know, questions that I want to ask or that I want to include, and then just let the conversation go. And these interviews really try to be conversations more than question, answer. And so just following along where the conversation goes and looking at my paper and like saying, oh yeah, we hit that, I'd still like to hit this. And, you know, once or twice the guests, it was so fascinating, the conversation, or maybe it went off in a direction that I wasn't really intending, but it was fascinating, and I still wanted to have the conversation that I wanted to have, so I said, hey, do you have time? Let's end this show. Let's get back on. Let's create another episode.
All right.
And have this conversation, or call me back in 2 weeks, and let's have this other conversation. So I think throughout all of this process of the writing of the novel, of the podcast, of these changeability books, and now doing a number of interviews like we're doing now, is this art, this play between preparation and improvisation. And the more comfortable I get with myself, with my own material, the more improvisational I can be. I think that's true in any art form, especially, or in life, right?
Absolutely.
Know what we're doing, the more we can let go of the wheel.
Oh, yes. Dance is another an area where that's really true, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's my background. You know, my background is as a dancer. And my first, I feel like it's kind of my first language, even though I'm a writer, my first language is the language of movement, which comes back into the changeability book because I talk about change as the movement of change. And I ask people to look at it as the constant ongoing movement of change. I mean, that's a really helpful idea for me. When I see that change is always moving and that I'm looking at the movement of change, and either I'm aligned with the current movement of change or I'm in resistance to it. That's really all there is. I'm either aligned with the movement or I'm in resistance to the movement. And when I look at change as movement, then I understand that I shouldn't be surprised by any change because it's always going to change.
Right. And I know, Mom, when we were talking about the show, about this book at lunch, there was something that you pulled from here about water and the movement of water.
Yeah. I love that because I know I was saying they have these floods and then how do they get rid of that water that's there, you know? I mean, anyway, water does not resist. It always goes where it wants to go.
That's right. You know, and sometimes in these natural disasters or when people have problems with their, you know, something going on in their home, you know, water is often the most difficult culprit. You know, you have a water problem in your home, it's a lot worse than the termite problem that I've had. But, you know, because water is always moving and it will find its way around most barriers, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
If it meets a wall of resistance, it is going to find its way around. Whether it rises up over the top of that barrier, whether it finds its way around, whether it seeps under, it is the nature of water to keep moving and to penetrate. And, you know, a lot of times when I'm talking about change and the movement of change, I do use this analogy of water because sometimes change is moving like a roaring river with high rapids and, you know, big holes. And sometimes it's moving like a quiet stream. Sometimes it's stagnant. When it's stagnant, it, you know, it's growing all kinds of funky things, or it starts to give life to mosquitoes and bugs and algae and other, you know, other life forms. But it's always moving, but its nature is different, right? You know, I live by the ocean, so, you know, that's a different movement of water than living by a river or a gentle rain or a torrential rain or these floods. You know, it's all different aspects of how change moves.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really very visual way of looking at it, isn't it? Of thinking about change. Yeah.
And also thinking about resistance, right? Because so when I'm aligning with the movement of change, I want to get in the current, right? You know, if anyone's ever, you know, been in a boat or in a canoe, or, you know, you get in or watched a leaf go down with the current of the water, right? You find yourself in that current, and then you go for a fun ride, right? It's behind you, it's pushing you. But if you plant yourself in resistance, in the current, oftentimes you'll get toppled over, right? Your feet will get knocked out from under you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you'll fall over. And so, you know, the art of what I'm calling changeability is learning how to have more flexibility in being able to see the current, meet the current, and have less resistance so you're not going to be toppled by it.
And isn't there something, you know, about in the ocean, if they're like the riptide, that you go across
I'm just going to say
current?
That.
Rather than trying to go against it?
Yes, yes.
You go with it and try to move toward the shore, the area of the riptide.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yep. That's what you do. And
it's always a good idea to go with the current.
It sounds impossible that you can actually get to shore that way, but that happened to me once. I got into a stream that I didn't realize was moving so fast, and I, you know, lost my footing, and then I remembered, okay, move, try to get over to the side. Instead of going straight down.
But going with the current.
Yeah. No, it does work.
Yeah.
Because that was just a stream. That wasn't
People
an ocean.
Say go with the flow. You know, there's all these expressions about it. You know, go with the flow or, you know, go with the current. But it's always, you know, it's there to assist our movement. You know, so another one of the seven principles of change that I talk about in these books is align with nature, which doesn't just mean align with the weather or align with the water, but it's, you know, it is aligned with the seasons, aligned with the cycles. It's like nature is doing the movement of change all the time, and it has been for millions of years. And so how can I read nature? How can I align with nature to assist me in the changes that I'm trying to make? That same idea of like, you know, yeah, don't go against the current. Find a way to go with the current.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. Our guest today is Sharon Weil, author of Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change, and also the Changeability Playbook and the Changeability Deck. Now, Sharon, you mentioned that that your publisher, Rare Bird Books, produced the podcast, but you did the podcast before the book. So how did you find the publisher before you had the books?
Oh, okay. Yes, I skipped that part. Okay, so I was introduced to Tyson Cornell of Rare Bird Books. When Donnie and Ursula first came out, I decided, you know, again, I'm learning as I go, right? So the book had already been published, and I felt that it would be good to have an additional publicist. And actually, that's not true. I started out with one publicist who didn't work out. And so I was introduced to Tyson, who really liked the book and said yes. So his company is Rare Bird Books, but they also do, or at that time did, outside publicity for authors that were not part of their stable. And so he was doing publicity, his company was doing publicity for Donnie and Ursula. And so one of the strategies for promoting the book of Donnie and Ursula was to do the podcast. You know, in his view, the way to promote a book is to just keep generating other reasons for people to know your name or for people to hear about the book, not just keep going, the book, here's but, you know, find other ways. And so the podcast was one of the ways that he thought would be a good idea, and so got me into that. And then it was his suggestion that I somehow make a book from what I was learning from these podcasts. And so his company then published Changeability. And then when I said, you know, people really are wanting to work with, when they read the book Changeability and they're reading about, you know, what all these amazing change makers are saying and doing, they are thinking about their own personal change. And so it would be a really good idea to come up with something that would be very accessible for people to be able to work with their own change. And so Rare Bird, and Archer is an imprint of Rare Bird. So Archer Rare Bird published the playbook as well. And then when I said, oh, it'd be so much fun to have one of these decks responding well to this idea. People love oracle cards, angel cards, mm-hmm. and all of these things. They would really love these. And so they said, and they have not produced something like a deck of these deck of cards before, but they said, sure, let's try it. So in each one of these things, somebody is in new territory, which, you know, seems to be a role that I'm in a lot in my life, and I don't mind. I really don't mind sort of being out there first and trying out the waters.
Well, obviously you're comfortable with change.
You know what? I'm really not. Let's talk about this. Okay. Let's talk about this. If you were to talk to my mother, you know, you're doing a show with your mother. We were talking. My mother would be saying, "Oh, Sharon is not always comfortable with change. You should have seen her in the first grade."
Well, that's a while ago.
She loved to tell the story. Oh, you just cried and cried, you know, before the first day of first grade. I really did have difficulty with the transitions. And it's funny because if I look at it, it wasn't that I'm so uncomfortable with what's to come. It's that I get very sentimental about what I'm leaving and sort of don't believe that what's going to be next could be as good, right?
Sure. Well, that's human nature.
Yeah, it's my sentimentality, it's my attachment, and then my fear that, you know, what's coming next won't be as good. So I am not, you know, known, I had not been known as somebody who really embraced change. You know, they say we write and teach what we need to learn and hear, right? So this book was written for me as well as everybody else. And it's funny, I don't know if you follow astrology or not, but I'm a Taurus. And, you know, Taurus also are not known for their, you know, mercurial nature or changeable nature. But somebody who is very versed in astrology read the book Changeability. She said, oh, this is a Taurus's book about change, because it's very step by step. It's very systematic. It's very here's what you do. Which is, I find, comfortable. You know, what I'm trying to do in these books, in these changeability books, is provide a scaffolding for people. You know, I'm so aware of how overwhelmed people get in the face of not just one change, but it's often multiple changes happening at the same time, or they get stuck, you know, attached like I did, or they get very frustrated and desperate when change isn't happening quickly enough. And so I'm trying to, like, create a scaffolding, something, you know, these seven principles of change is like a wheel, it's like a template that people can look at the change in their life or what they're trying to work with and see, you know, what of these seven principles are present, which ones aren't present or aren't present enough, which ones do I need to turn the volume up on. in a somewhat practical way. I'm trying to offer some practical tools for people to deal with the overwhelm or the frustration of change in this hugely changing times that we're living in.
So Sharon, how did you, and at what point did you sort of take all this information that you had gathered from all these different change artists and these people that you were talking to on your podcast and identify seven principles from that information and sort of categorize everything into those seven principles? What was that process like? How long did that, you know, was that something that was immediately obvious to you? Or?
So let me just say that it happened very quickly. I basically wrote this book. I mean, I did an outline for the book, like maybe, you know, from about March through June. And from June through, so, you know, at the time my daughter was in high school, and I had the summer, basically, where I didn't have to be, like, full hands-on mom. So in that entire summer, I wrote this book extremely fast. You know, Donnie and Ursula took me 8 years to write. The novel took me 8 years to write. I didn't work on it every day, all day, but the whole process was about an eight-year process, and part of that was because I just was insecure, and I didn't know if it was working, and I didn't even know what I was doing. But this one came very fast, and the reason for it was because it was so complex. There was so much material that I felt like a weaver at a loom, and I was holding all these different colors of threads in my hands, and if I let go of any of them, the whole thing would unravel. And so it's that idea of like being so in the process that I had to stay in the process, and I worked, and I do not recommend this, but I worked 8 to 10 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wow.
To write this changeability book for about 3 months. And then, of course, there was another version, you know, with the editor and, you know, all of that, but the basic material. And in that, you know, time, because when I was listening to the guests, when I was in the podcast and listening to the guests, I started, the first principle that was the common thing I was hearing was this principle of listen deeply, which means that, you know, these guests were approaching whatever they were doing first by listening, not by having an agenda or an idea going in, but, you know, especially the artists and the body workers and, you know, the people who work in nature. First, they listen and they assess and they say, what is the change that's needed here? Or what's going on right now? What's going on with my client? What's going on with this person? And you listen first. And you understand that the world is offering us feedback in many different forms all the time. If we just listen about where we're at in our lives, about what's working, about what's not working. And so the first one I was hearing was listen deeply. The next one I was hearing was about find community, which was not just people, finding people, but finding support and finding help and using other people and using, you know, whether it's like a physical practice to support you through a change or a spiritual practice to support you through a change. And perhaps the next one that I heard was this proceed incrementally, which speaks to, you know, don't try to do it all at once. You know, and especially the activists were saying, you know, you've got to pace yourself. You know, you've got to pace yourself. You've got to pick off something that is manageable. It's a manageable task. You've got to break larger tasks into smaller ones. You know, one of the people that I interviewed is Beth Rosales, who is a philanthropic advisor, and she was saying, you know, $5 from 100 people or 1,000 people is worth more to an organization than a larger grant.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's like, or this idea of starting small and rippling out. and ripple, let it ripple out. Start it small, start with who you know, keep it local, and then let it grow from there was a strategy that I not only was hearing from these guests, but had heard from other people in my life as well. And so then I started asking myself, okay, well, what else then? If these are starting to emerge as principles that are common to all change or need to be, what else? And then I just started to, you know, reflect on what people were saying and also reflect on what it is that I know and have known, and came up with the seven. The other ones, I think, that I haven't mentioned are also bring awareness, align with nature, have hope, and spark fire. And then I started to apply it to every situation I was in or could think of. Mm. Work here. Does it work here with a relationship changes? Does it work here with health changes? Does it work here with social change? Does it work here with personal change? And the answer was yes. Or if it wasn't yes, then I was able to tweak it or understand more, or maybe there was another idea that occurred to me, and I said, well, you know, seven's a great number. People love the number seven. They love lists, and they love the number seven.
Yep, so yep.
Seven
habits of highly effective people.
That's right. Does it fit into one of these seven categories? And the answer was always yes. And so it was quite an alive, consuming time writing this thing. I was shocked, and my body did not like it because I was not, like, moving very much, was not doing much. You know, I don't recommend it. I really don't recommend it.
But it worked.
But it worked. Each of these projects have their own demands. You know, I'm somebody, I know that you're very interested in creative process, and so am I. And I find that, you know, if it's a fiction, then your characters are talking to you. And if it's a nonfiction, then there is some voice, some entity, some purpose that is driving this, driving this story. Because even a nonfiction is a story. You know, you're telling some sort of story. And each one has its own energy, and it has its own demand. And the demand of this one was like, boom, get this done. Just get this done, get this out. And so I feel like my job as the writer is just to be in service to these ideas that want to come through us.
Wow. Well, before we run out of time, actually, let me just do a little identification in case someone's just tuning in, that they're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Sharon Weil, author of Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. But I do want to give you a chance to read a little bit from the book so people can get an idea of how it sounds. But before that, I wanted to ask you, I pulled up the Rare Bird website, and it says it was established in 2009 and publishes about 50 plus books a year. It says it's a publisher of the great and infamous, and I'm just wondering which one you are.
I don't know that I'm either.
Okay, just wondered.
Yeah.
Well, you're probably not infamous, so you must be great.
I must be great. yeah, I don't know.
I want to ask you real quick about the cover, because it's so unusual.
It is. The whole design of the book is unusual. You want to talk about that?
Yes, you know, so Alice Marsh Elmer is the designer for Rare Bird, and she's just brilliant. I just think she's amazing. And, you know, because this book was about change, and it was really about sort of the idea of the dynamic swirl, the chaos of change, meeting something that's more directed or directional. She came up with this incredible cover where the book itself is represents a sort of abstract swirl of change, and I'm probably being more literal than she was when she created this. But then there are these there's a book jacket on top of it that has these cutouts, literal cutouts, in these triangular shapes that let this background of the swirl come through. And it's it's in bold red,
it's a work of modern art.
Modern art. Very attractive, and it makes somebody want to pick it up,
right?
You know, so when people are designing book covers, one of the things that they want to do is be attractive enough that someone's going to literally pick the book up, right? And then once they pick it up, you know, what do they meet when they read it? And so, yeah, it's a stunning look. And then, you know, she also created this beautiful graphic for the Wheel of Change. And it looks kind of like an iris that opens and closes, and kind of like a little bit of a Japanese abstract flower or something. But it really has become this logo that I use all the time in promotion, and it's on the cover of the Changeability deck, and it's a cool reminder of what that wheel actually is, and that it is constantly moving. It's not a list. These seven principles aren't a list. They're a wheel.
Very cool. Well, could you give us about 5 minutes of reading?
Yes. Do you want to? I think maybe I'll talk about the seven principles of change. I'll read from that. And please stop me.
Okay. All right. I'll have to, because we'll run out of time.
Okay, great. So the seven principles of change. Navigating change is complex. It can be messy and stressful, and therefore I can use all the help I can get. The more I understand the nature of change and the necessities of change, the better I can master changeability. The more I can locate myself in the particular change that I am in, the more I understand its nature. The more ground I have to stand on, even if that ground is moving as well. When I can locate myself in change, I can then see what is needed to help me navigate. I can then decide which tools to reach for to help me move with the movement of change with greater ease and less struggle. There are seven principles for change, seven necessary interactive principles that when spiraled together can facilitate more success, ease, and support for initiating new changes or accommodating the changes that constantly present themselves, large or small. I don't mean to oversimplify, but I do mean to clarify and single out each of these seven principles as a way to slow down the different aspects of change, to examine them so that you can come to recognize them as they swiftly sweep by you when the shit hits the fan in the swirl and whirl of complex change. When you think about it, the principles for making change and the principles for accepting change or adapting to change are the same. They all require awareness, responsiveness, support, strategy, a sense of possibility, and a compelling reason why. This is another way of expressing the list of the seven principles above. If I am told I have a pre-diabetic condition and I need to improve my diet to improve my health, the same principles of change are involved as if I'm downsizing from my job and need to find another one quickly, or if a hurricane floods my home in New Orleans and I need to evacuate and later salvage the house from water damage. Each condition requires the awareness, I will not remain in my current circumstance, and the intention, I will survive. Hopefully also, I will thrive. What I've observed is that in order to create, accept, or adapt to personal, social, or environmental change, I will need all of these principles working together at least some of the time. I'll need at least a few of them all of the time, and which ones I need can vary. The seven are the necessary principles common to all change. Whether I perceive the change or not, accept the change or not, or work on behalf of the change or not, I find that when I apply this template of seven to a change situation, it holds true. And if a change I'm going through is not moving well, then I can look to these seven principles for change, see what is missing from the picture, and see if enhancing that missing element will create more momentum and support and a greater ease of changeability. So that's probably enough right there.
That's perfect. Thank you. And that was Sharon Weil reading from Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. Mom, did you have a couple of other points you wanted to bring up?
Well, let's see. Oh, yeah, that there is more than funding here. It's people, and we need bodies on the front lines. If you're going to, for instance, the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, it needed really people expressing themselves by being there, right?
Yes. So you're talking about Beth Rosales,
uh-huh.
who I believe that this was her quote. Beth Rosales, who is a advisor to progressive philanthropy, and she was saying that giving money is great and it's very needed, but what's also needed is people's actions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People's actions and bodies on the line to make things, in order to make social change happen, right?
Right.
You know, and in the same, Claire Hope Cummings, who is an environmental lawyer and journalist, and wrote the seminal book on GMOs, she and has been a lifelong activist, you know, she has a lot to say in the book and to me, on an aside, about social media, you know, how social media is great for, you know, bringing awareness, but it's not enough to just click on a petition. You know, and we've all gotten sort of inured to the idea that, oh, I'm taking an action because I'm clicking on a petition,
right.
But it's really not enough.
Right.
You know, we really do need to make our voices heard and to put our bodies out there in some way, as well as click on the petitions,
mm-hmm.
and you know, give whatever we can to the causes that we believe in.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Sharon, you've got these books out there, and I know you're going to do another podcast series. But are there some more, another book in the wings?
You know, they always ask, it's like, you never rest on your laurels, right? What's next? I would love to get back to fiction. You know, there, and I don't really know what that story is yet. Something feels like it's starting to knock on the inside of my head. But I would like to, when I have my next chunk of time, I would like to start thinking or conjuring or courting what that next fiction might be. And I do enjoy writing humorously, I have to say. It's kind of a sub-style of mine to be able to write about important things in humorous ways. So, I don't know, hopefully it won't take another 8 years for the next fiction.
No.
But I feel like that's where I would like to go. And, you know, this whole activity of helping people with their changeability is continuing on as well.
That's great, and we're I'm just wondering too, and we have like 30 seconds. What is the cause that is dearest to your heart in terms of your own activism? Is it the GMO issue?
Well, the GMO issue is very important to me. I would say, you know, people's freedoms, and however that is presented or however that is encroached. I think all of the ways in which I speak up and speak out have to do with helping people empower themselves, empower their causes, and ensure freedom of expression, especially.
Well, thank you so much for being with us here today. And Mom, do you have some closing words?
Yes, I do. Actually, I wrote this. As our world changes, let us strive to build a compassionate, peaceful future, because many of us will be living there in that future, and some of us won't for long, but then we will have children and grandchildren that will.
Mm. Stay tuned now for Planet Erstwhile with James Moore if you're listening on Friday. And if you're listening on Monday, have a great day. The show will rebroadcast Monday morning at 8 a.m. Also, check out writersvoices.com, and see you next week on Writers Voices. And thank you, Sharon.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
It sure has.
Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUU LP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.